You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Hi, what's
Hello.
Up?
It's a quick announcement at the top of the show.
You know how these go. It's a live show, so we got to announce it months in the future.
Well, speaking of live shows.
Yeah.
We've got some coming up pending
coronavirus. We don't know about corona cancellations. We'll show up and you can cough in our mouths as far as I'm concerned. That's how committed we are to our fans.
Yes.
But upcoming shows, we have a show that is sold out in Austin, Texas on April 18th. Mm-hmm. But a little bird that is us told us, we told ourselves that maybe there'll be a second show at it. So keep your eyes peeled.
So keep your eyes peeled. Follow us on social media and check our website for that. We will be doing a show in Boston for the Women in Comedy Festival in early May.
And then we are going to do a Caitlin's birthday bash / general huge show at Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles on May 15th. And baby, we're doing Titanic for the fifth time.
The fifth episode.
Still have more to say. I emailed Billy Zane's agent.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see.
Well, so he might be at the show. There's only one way to find out. You better
so
get
there's
tickets.
Hope.
So yeah, go to Bechdelcast.com for all the ticket information, and we'll keep everyone updated in case there are any cancellations. Fingers crossed that there will not be.
Stay safe. Wash your hands.
Be healthy. Stay
do
safe.
All that. Do all that good stuff. And without further ado, here is an episode we recorded back in January in Philadelphia about the Sixth Sense.
Ooh, enjoy.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hey everybody, how are you? Welcome. Here we are, Philadelphia. We're back. Who's been here to see us before? Oh, I love when people are studious and they're like, me, hands up.
Raise my hand.
We're so psyched to be back. We love Good so much.
Yes. Yes, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Well, we're the Bechdel. Good to see ya. We're the Bechdel cast. My name's Caitlin Durante.
I'm Jamie Loftus. And this is our feminist movie podcast. We'll do a quick quiz at the top. So this is the free applause part. Who here has listened to the Bechdel cast? Wow. Validation. We love it. Okay. And then practical, who has not listened to the Bechdel cast? Don't be shy. Right in the front.
We got you. We see you.
Right in the front. Okay. Okay. There's work to be done.
Okay. So today's movie is The Sixth Sense. Who has seen the movie?
And is anyone not? There's one person in the back. Oh my gosh. We'll talk about it, but like, I never got to see this movie without knowing the twist that happened. So I never got to see a good movie. It's like, it's not fair.
Right.
I felt cheated.
Uh-huh.
Oh well, we'll talk about it. I'm kidding. It's the greatest movie ever made, but like, you've seen it.
What?
So we're doing The Sixth Sense today. We're doing it because Galaxy Brain, it happens here.
It does.
Yeah.
Philadelphia. Yeah. Ever heard of it?
We should say what the Bechdel cast is.
Yes, let's do that. So we are a feminist movie podcast. We analyze the portrayal of women in film one movie at a time.
Until there's no movies left.
We use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point to initiate a larger conversation. Yes. And that, of course, is a media metric created by cartoonist Alison Bechdel that requires that two female identifying characters with names have to speak to each other about something other than a man.
Yeah. Does it happen in movies? Every once in a while it does.
Sometimes.
I will say anytime someone says that they've listened to our podcast but is lying, they're like, oh, your show, isn't it about you spend an hour trying to figure out if it passes the Bechdel test? And we're like, no. What? Imagine if we were just poring over the script
every
for the
single
sixth
line
sense.
Of like, dialogue.
How do you feel? Nope, doesn't look like it. Like,
but, wait, can we demonstrate the Bechdel test?
Yes.
For anyone who's not familiar?
Yes, please.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Caitlin.
I see dead women.
Wow, that's so brave and progressive of you.
Thank you.
And that's like, you know, it doesn't have to be good writing. It just has to be writing. And so that's what we're doing here.
Yes.
And so after, you know, people have been begging us, Jamie, Caitlin, do a feminist analysis of The Sixth Sense.
It's our top request.
Everyone wants to know. But I'm just thrilled that we get to talk about Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
My lifelong crush.
So this episode will not pass at all because we'll just be talking about Haley Joel Osment. When you talk about Haley Joel Osment, it does pass the Bechdel test.
We checked. We just emailed like Alison Bechdel.
Same applies to Alfred Molina, of course.
If I have a crush on them, it passes the Bechdel test. that's canon. Caitlin, what is your history with the cinematic masterpiece, The Sixth Sense?
I saw the movie in theaters in 1999 in Dubois, Pennsylvania. Anyone familiar? I was 12 or 13, didn't really know anything about it except that it was like, you know, the hot movie of the moment. It was very spooky, and because I was the age that I was, I thought it was great.
Movie is for 12-year-olds. Like, this is like, this movie is like the most hardcore shit a 12-year-old has ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, that kind of applies to, like, M. Night Shyamalan's entire filmography. Like, if you're 12, you're like, this shit is unbelievable. Right. But then when you are, you know, 13, you're like, oh, what? What is happening?
And I don't think I had seen it again since. But because it's such a huge part, it's infiltrated pop culture.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the twist ending. Everyone knows the famous line about seeing dead people, not women, not feminist.
No, I think it's a gender neutral term, and it's, you know, all encompassing. I think that Haley Joel Osment is an icon. He probably insisted on that line. What if M. Night Shyamalan was like, okay, you're going to say, I see dead hetero men, and Haley Joel Osment's like, no, I have an idea. I know I'm 8 years old, but let's be inclusive, you know.
I hope so.
I'm gonna be cutting them all kinds of slack.
What is your history with the movie?
Not much. I wasn't allowed to see this movie when it came out, because I think I was like 6 or 7 when it came out, and so I didn't get to see it. But then I knew the twist years before. I think I finally saw it maybe in middle school, mm-hmm. but I already knew the twist mm-hmm. because some jackass at school had fucked it up for me. So I knew the twist. But by that point, I think I had seen The Sixth Sense after I'd seen Haley Joel Osment in Secondhand Lions.
Uh-huh.
And we have some Secondhand Lions. The Secondhand Lions hive has come. To Philadelphia. Secondhand Lions, not that bad. Pretty good.
I think it's pretty good.
I think that you know, pretty good. Yeah. A solid pretty good. But that was like where my crush really like solidified.
Okay.
I'm like, well, we've got to go back. We've got to see everything. So that was, so I went to see it for horny child purposes. and I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's my entire history. And then I watched it again.
Yeah.
I forgot Toni Collette is in this movie.
I saw this movie before I knew who Toni Collette was. So same. Yeah, didn't know she was in it at all.
Yeah, I think that Toni Collette, like, I mean, based on the interviews I've read with her, it seems like maybe she would prefer we forgot she was in this movie. She's like, yeah. Anyways, Knives Out. Like, she just blaze through it.
Sure.
Although I think that Toni Collette's character in this movie is kind of like the lightest version of her character in Hereditary, because a lot of times in movies, Toni Collette is just like, what's going on with my son? Like, that is the part she's given a lot. Like, multiple, she's just like, she's on screen and we're like, oh, I wonder what her motivation is. She's like, my son's doing fucked up things. And and then that's the, I'm like, come, we gotta, you know.
Yeah.
She should have an Oscar. Not for this, though.
She was nominated, though, right?
For this movie?
Am I wrong?
Oh, my God.
I think she was.
For what?
Wait.
I love Toni Collette, but you're just like, she's dressed like Velma from Scooby-Doo at the end of the movie.
She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, she didn't win. I mean, she didn't win. I mean, come on.
I don't think so.
She didn't win. Did you notice that when you were rewatching it? Like, the end of the movie where Haley Joel Osment and Toni Collette's relationship is like resolved at the end. She's dressed exactly like Velma from Scooby-Doo. She's wearing
the turtleneck,
dark, the hairstyle is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And she's crying. But I'm like, I can't engage. I'm so distracted by the fact that she's cosplaying during this.
I mean, when you think of it, The Sixth Sense is like a very gritty Scooby-Doo narrative.
Unpack
it's like
that.
Ghosts
unpack that.
And who?
Unpack that. Who is the bad guy in this movie? Death? Is it like Final Destination in that way? We should cover a Final Destination movie. They'll all pass. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I guess that the closest we get to a villain in this movie is Munchausen's by proxy mom.
Right.
Who I forgot about. And I'm like, what is that doing here? And then there's little Misha Barton. We'll get to that too.
Sure. Well, should I do the recap?
Yeah, I guess we started on accident. So
here we go. Dr. Malcolm Crowe is Bruce Willis.
And a million times a movie, you're like, it's not Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Right.
Dr. Malcolm Crowe.
Uh-huh. This is not Jurassic Park as much as we want it to be.
Yeah.
And his wife, Anna Crowe.
Anna Crowe, yeah. I like in the beginning scene, her whole thing, she's like, I'm your wife. Mm-hmm. She literally says it. She's like, I'm your wife and you don't pay attention to me. And he's like, anyways. Like, that's the whole first scene. They're staring at a plaque that's honoring his accomplishment at a job we soon learn he's not good at.
Not good at.
And she's just like, I'm your wife and you're mean. And he's like, ha ha.
Right, but that's what they're celebrating because he's received an award from the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah. I hope that, you know, Philly doesn't just give out awards for this kind of stuff.
And then a former patient of his, Vincent Gray, who is played by Donnie Wahlberg.
So for some reason when I was rewatching this movie with my boyfriend, kill me, I'm not a feminist. I was watching it with him, and for some reason I was so 1,000,000% sure that the guy who shoots Bruce Willis was Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. To the point where when he came on screen and it was visibly not Christian Bale, I was like, he's a chameleon. Like, he's so good that he has a different head. Like, but it's not. It's Donnie Wahlberg.
It's Donnie Wahlberg.
He lost 40 pounds to do this one scene, which
is kind
of embarrassing for him. But so, imagine losing 40 pounds and then being on set maximum 2 days. You know? Like,
I know.
What was he trying to prove? Whatever it was, it didn't work. He owns a cheeseburger, you know, joint. Whatever. He does fine.
Yeah. So this former patient, Vincent Gray, feels Dr. Malcolm Crowe has completely failed him. And so he shoots Malcolm in the abdomen and then he shoots himself in the head. We cut to the following fall. Malcolm is stalking a child. the way we see that.
Yeah, no, he's stalking a child.
He's stalking a child named Cole Sear.
Also, Cole, okay, for everyone in the crowd who's like, wait, Cole Sear? This movie is very subtle. You have to be careful with these sort of things.
But it's not spelled S-E-E-R.
No, it's subtle.
It's spelling.
It is really fun to read. Like, I have some quotes for later, but whenever M. Night Shyamalan, like when this movie was coming out, he was interviewing for this movie as if the very obvious things in the movie were so subtle. He's like, well, Cole Sear. Now, not everyone's going to get this, but... He sees dead people.
So we find out that Cole is Malcolm's patient, and he's a sweet boy.
He's an angel. He's a talent. You know, Jacob Tremblay wishes, you know.
But there's something different about Cole. He's not like the other boys.
He's not like the other Sears.
And he speaks Latin, and he... opens all the drawers in the kitchen, or is that him, or is it the ghost?
We don't know.
We meet his mom, Lynn Sear. That's Toni Collette,
of course. Toni Collette, and she's like, don't look at me.
So Cole and Malcolm have an appointment at Cole's house, and we learn more about him. He made a drawing that depicted this violent murder, and he has a secret. Okay, so meanwhile, Malcolm's home life is rough. His wife
keeps ignoring him, and we're like, why? Does anyone in the crowd not know how it is? Okay, never mind. But like... It's so, like, there is this thing with thrillers. We were just talking about this backstage. There is this thing with, like, thrillers that have a twist that you can really only tell if they're a good movie when you've seen it twice.
Right.
Like, if anyone has seen Parasite, I will not spoil anything. There's a twist in the movie, and when you see it the second time, you're like, oh, this is an amazing movie, because it gets even better once you know the twist. Whereas The Sixth Sense is a little different. Once you know the twist, you're like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
I can't wait. I have so many questions that are going to poke some holes in this plot.
We're really going to show him.
This movie was nominated for Best Picture that year.
I know, but like 99 was like not a good year for anyone. It was...
Okay, so...
So his wife is ignoring him.
Yes, and...
His wife.
Malcolm and Cole meet again, and they're making some progress, but there's something that's really troubling Cole, and we still don't know what it is. He has an outburst at school, then there's this birthday party incident where some mean boys lock Cole in a little cupboard, and then he has some sort of seizure-type thing.
Yeah.
Then Malcolm is with him in the hospital, and Cole says he's ready to tell Malcolm his secret. And then...
Trailer moment!
We get... The line.
I see dead women.
No.
Haley Joel Osment's a really good actor.
He's, you know me, I don't like a lot of child actors, but Haley Joel really knocks it out of the park.
He's perfect. He's perfect in all subsequent roles as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have a whole section later.
Okay, good. Okay, so he sees dead people, and the ghosts that he sees, they're everywhere.
All the time.
They don't know that they're dead. He sees them all the time, and it's just...
They're very melodramatic, these ghosts that he sees.
They apparently have all died very violent deaths as well. There's
I thought that was because of it's like, oh, it's just people with unfinished business who... Their unfinished business is, I want to scream at Haley Joel Osment. Like, their unfinished business has never really made that clear. They just want to yell at him.
And scare him. Yeah.
A lot of people died having not yelled at him yet. And that is what allows them to pass on.
I guess.
Who knows? This movie makes no sense.
So, Malcolm assumes that Cole seeing dead people is the result of a mental illness, but we start to learn that there actually are dead people walking around who torment and abuse and yell at Cole.
Yes.
So Malcolm he's under a lot of pressure. He says he's going to transfer Cole to another doctor because he needs to spend more time with his wife. And
because his wife is getting a little flirty with some guy.
Yes.
And Bruce Willis is acting out about it because he doesn't know he's dead and so forth.
Right. But Cole begs Malcolm to help him and believe him because, you know, hashtag believe
Haley Joel Osment. I think everyone in the crowd would agree. We, as a fan base, believe Haley Joel Osment. Yes.
So Malcolm starts to reflect back on his treatment of Vincent, the person from the beginning of the movie.
Not Christian Bale.
Donnie Wahlberg.
Right.
And he plays back some old tapes, and Malcolm realizes that Vincent had this same seeing dead people curse, which we learn apparently only afflicts little boys whose parents are divorced.
Right.
That's...
Malcolm is obsessed with divorce. Anytime you see him like treating a patient, the first thing about them is like first name, last name, status of parents, marriage.
Yeah.
And that like he's so, and then he's like divorced. Okay, this kid is going to be. I'm like, you know, by that logic, half of the planet
would
is
see
fucked.
Dead people.
Yeah. Which we do.
Well, you are a child of divorce, yes.
I am, yes. And there's no one in this room right now. But I can see them.
My parents are, their marriage is legally binding, so I can't see dead people.
You have, yeah. Get them to sign the papers. Your life is going to change. Bruce Willis is going to show up.
Okay, so Malcolm, he realizes that the dead people that Cole is seeing just want help from Cole. They want Cole to help them. And he's like, if you just listen to them, they'll go away.
Right.
So,
but it's still very unclear what some of the ghosts want help with. Some,
because we really only find out about one of them, which is Misha Barton ghost. She shows up. She's puking everywhere. And then
feminist.
Cole is like, hi, how can I help you? And
this is his first customer service job. That is a lot of customer service, is someone puking at you and you being like, I don't mind this. Like,
so we cut to Cole and Malcolm going to her funeral, and everyone thinks she died of a terminal illness, but Cole helps uncover that Misha Barton was actually being poisoned by her own mother.
In a scene that, hint, hint, passes the Bechdel test. When you know when your mom is killing you and it passes the Bechdel test. That was a wild one. She was like, I want you to eat your soup and don't complain about how it tastes. Passes. Uh-huh. This is one of my new favorite passes.
Yeah. It's really good. So that has been resolved. And then Cole tells his mom about his secret. There's this exchange about
she's dressed like Velma.
His grandmother. Right. And Malcolm is like, okay, I'm going to try to reconnect with... His wife.
But it's because Cole says something that outside the context of the movie is like, ugh. He's like, I know what you should do. Talk to his wife while she's asleep. And I'm like, if he's alive, this is the scariest thing that's ever been said. Like, imagine waking up and someone you love being like, I just wish I could connect with you. Be like, text me, I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, Haley Joel Osment gives this advice because he knows Bruce Willis is dead. And Bruce Willis just receives it like, never thought of that.
Okay, that's what I'm unclear about. Does Haley Joel know that he's
dead? Oh, he definitely
dead?
Does, yeah.
Okay.
That's when he says, all the time. He's like, literally right now, I'm seeing dead people.
Wait. Am I alone here?
Oh, no,
I thought that he didn't know.
No, he definitely knows.
How?
He definitely, like, he gives hints all the time that he knows. My interpretation, maybe I'm giving M. Night Shyamalan too much credit, but my interpretation is he doesn't tell Bruce Willis that he's dead because if he tells him he's dead, Bruce Willis will disappear. He'll go away. And he doesn't want Bruce Willis to go away because daddy issues.
Okay. I that never interpreted reading. That that way. He I interpreted fully knows, that but... he had no idea, and he was like, "Oh, here's a child psychologist conveniently here to help me."
You underestimate Haley Joel Osment. Because at the end he says, like, "This is the last time I'm going to see you, huh?" Because he knows that, like,
I think maybe he figures it out by the end. Maybe. I don't know. I was like, he doesn't know. Just like we don't know.
Well, it's like, I mean, the logic of this movie relies on Bruce Willis's character being very stupid, which he is. But it's like there's multiple scenes where it's like if you were Haley Joel Osment and there was a strange man in your hospital room that your mom had never met, you would be like, "Mom," you know, but like he doesn't because he knows Bruce Willis is dead.
It's but a psychologist.
But like we don't. I mean, Bruce Willis just shows up and he's like, "I'm your like." I don't know. I think Haley Joel Osment knows.
Well, one of my questions that would poke holes in the story logic is like, how did this patient doctor relationship start?
That's why I feel like Haley Joel Osment just accepts it because he can tell when people are dead, and he's like, "Oh, this ghost seems like less bleeding than usual." Like, let's see where this goes.
Got it. Okay, well, this has just crumbled my entire life.
I could be wrong. I don't know. That's just how I thought of it.
I want to take a poll. Can we? Who read it the way that Jamie reads it, that Haley knew? That round of applause.
Okay. Okay, a fair amount of people.
Okay. Round of applause. Who did not know and thought that Cole does not know that he's a ghost? Okay.
Okay, so we have some Mensa members in the room.
And we have some people with master's degrees in the room.
You know? Being a Mensa member costs $60. How much did your... Anyways. I don't know. I mean, I guess it doesn't. I mean, at the end of the day, how hard was M. Night Shyamalan thinking about this?
I mean, there's so many plot holes. So Bruce Willis is like, "I got to go reconnect with my wife." And then his attempt to do that makes him learn that he's been dead the whole time. Because he was shot, he was killed when
Donnie Wahlberg killed him.
Shot him, yes. And that's the movie.
And then we're like, wow, it's perfect. No notes.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Okay.
I mean, should we just start with like what a dog shit child psychologist Malcolm is, like alive or dead? He's trash. He's so bad. Like we've already sort of talked a little bit about his like obsession with divorce, where he's like divorce equals mental illness equals ghosts. Like right. He's like really taking it a long way. And then another thing that I noticed just throughout the movie is he also has a strong aversion to medicating any sort of mental illness. There's this really dramatic shot mm-hmm. when he's, first of all, watching his wife shower. She doesn't know he's there.
Right.
And then weird to start. And then it pans over and there's a very dramatic shot of her bottle of Zoloft. And he's like, first of all, everyone on the planet is on. Like, what are you taught? Like,
and he's a psychologist.
He's a psychologist. I'm like, oh my God, have you never prescribed someone Zoloft? You probably should, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like so deeply shocked that his wife would dare to go so far as to take Zoloft.
Right. And then when Cole tells him, you know, I see dead people, they're around me all the time. And then Malcolm like reassesses his like evaluation of Cole. And he's like, oh, it's like worse than I thought. He might need hospitalization and medication. And then proceeds to not do anything about it. Like, he's just like, well, we'll just meet several more times. I'll go to his play at school.
So that's like also doctor patient. Like, that breaches something.
Right.
Like, imagine if my therapist came to here. Mm-hmm. I would be like, I would be like, come on stage, let's talk. But but in theory, that's very unprofessional.
Yes, I think so.
But one thing I did like that mm-hmm. Bruce Willis does is when he leaves the first play, he goes to two plays also.
Yes, he's like, school has so many plays.
Which goes into the whole daddy issues thing that I have later. But at the end of the first play, he's like, well, it was better than Cats. And you're like, you fucking idiot. Like, this was not better than.
And then we're like, oh, well, I never was there ever. A cat so clever as Magical Miss.
And there's also, like, first of all, like, Haley Joel Osment wishes he was Skimble Shanks. In his wildest dreams. And he could have done, I have no doubt. But, which is, was a majority British cast. Mm-hmm. So, but all that to say, what is that phrase about? Is it people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones? M. Night Shyamalan's coming after Cats? I'm like, it's all bad, honey. Like, it's all, you can't be like in the middle of The Sixth Sense, the stupidest movie ever, and be like, Cats sucked, right? I'm like, sir. It all sucked. Like, calm down.
I don't think this movie's terrible.
I don't think it's terrible. Yeah. I just think it's dumb.
It's very stupid.
Dumb movies are fun all the time. For example, Cats.
Of course. Can I ask my questions?
Ask your questions,
Caitlin. Okay, thank you so much. Okay, so the movie does a little bit to show that Malcolm and his wife have grown apart and they don't really talk anymore. But we're to believe that he's been dead for several months.
He's been dead for a while.
A while.
And then it's like the story logic is so bizarre where it's like, and most people did suspend their disbelief, including me. But it's like, we're to believe that Bruce Willis has not spoken to his wife.
Had a real conversation.
Months.
They wouldn't have had sex or kissed or anything like that.
It would
months
have,
and months and months.
Which, it happens. But if you're not even having a conversation, eventually you're going to be like, hey, view
right.
me.
Okay.
Like,
exactly. Okay, so
that would be me day two.
I
would be like, excuse me. Pass the butt. What has he been eating?
Would you? Right.
What is he? She's been making dinner for one, and then on day 50, he's like, I'm hungry. Like,
would
what
you,
the fuck?
Would you humor me, Jamie?
Yes,
and
of course.
You pretend to be my wife.
Okay.
And I'll be dead Bruce Willis.
Okay.
And you're just going to have to ignore everything I say because I'm dead, right?
I'm horny.
Okay.
I'm horny for someone else. Also, it is kind of... Okay, wait. Can I break?
Yeah.
The fact that it has only been a couple of months and she's like, I should probably be fucking. I'm like, you know what? Everyone grieves differently.
I'm okay with
a
it.
A very horny grief.
Okay, so
I'm
you're
your
my
I'm your
dead
wife.
His wife.
I'm
okay.
your his wife.
Hey, honey, how was your day at work? Honey? Why are you ignoring me? Did you have a bad day?
I'm sighing because my husband died.
Is that, Is something wrong? Why won't you talk to... Yeah. So that's how that would go.
Also, we're to believe that she hasn't talked about it at all. Like, he's never walked in on her on the phone being like, so about my husband's assets, like,
right. Or like the funeral.
The funeral. Like, where was he?
What?
Or, I mean, was it, are we supposed to believe that maybe he like came to, but then someone's saying yes, but then it's also like, he's acting like we've been growing apart for months. And so I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Here's my next
question.
But
it was nominated for many Oscars. Not the first time.
Okay, so does Malcolm not notice or care that he apparently has only one patient? And it's a little boy?
And one outfit.
One outfit,
yeah, his sweater.
Does he not notice that no one seems to talk to him except a small child?
No, he doesn't.
Also,
he thinks people are talking around him all the time, but no one ever direct. Imagine if no one ever directly addressed you. You would just feel like you were in junior high again. Like, it would be, he's just living in.
Right. Yeah. No one seems to notice he exists, but he doesn't notice that.
Does he think he's getting paid?
Right.
Who's, this jig goes on for a while and you're like, is Toni Collette supposed to be paying him?
But it's like, I guess they only see what they want to see, which is like such a like throwaway line that like excuses a lot of plot holes.
He's sending her like ghost bills. She's not replying to his ghost invoices. We've all been there.
Right. Next question. So various times when it seems like Cole would be under adult supervision because he seems to be with Malcolm, then you realize he was just like alone in that hospital room.
Yeah.
Alone walking the halls of his school at night. Alone walking around in a park. Like, he's just like always alone.
Talking to
no one.
You saw a tiny little Haley Joel Osment baby talking to no one, you would be like, I'm abducting you. You know, like,
you might do that.
You're my son now.
I don't know someone if I would do that.
But someone would do something.
Right.
If not that. They would be like, are you okay?
Where's your mom?
Yeah. What's going on?
And then also, why, after Vincent Gray kills himself, why does Cole never see him? Because he would be a ghost walking around. Unless he doesn't have any unfinished business.
I guess his business was to kill Bruce Willis. He's like, I'm out. I don't know. We have no background for him. They're just like, well, child of divorce. So clearly, you're going to want to kill Bruce Willis.
Right.
Although I think Vincent Gray is maybe one of the more realistic characters in the story, because the ends don't justify I don't know if I'm using that phrase correctly, but you know, he does say, hey, Bruce Willis, you're a shitty psychologist.
Yeah.
You said because I was divorced, my parents were divorced, I was Satan, and now you will pay. Like, that part shouldn't have happened, but like up till then he was like really on a roll.
Sure.
He was a bad child psychologist.
Also, he's always violating HIPAA laws because he's like telling his wife about his patient.
His patient.
And that's not allowed.
Well, because he has to talk about his job to his wife, because we don't know anything about his wife other than she's like, I feel neglected. And then he dies.
Right.
We do find out. So if we're talking about, I mean, unfortunately, there's really not a ton of discussion to be had about his wife, because we know so little about her other than she was married to him, and then
he's not around anymore.
She's just home watching the wedding tape, you know, the whole bit. She's wearing out the VHS. There's one scene where we see her at work at, I think, an antique shop that sells jewelry. But the one scene we see her working, she's like gaslighting a couple into buying a diamond ring they clearly can't afford.
Right.
And then the unnamed female character, one of the only non-white characters in the movie, she's talking to her future husband. and it's just like, it's kind of the classic trope of like, women be desiring blood diamonds.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And so his wife, gaslights the couple into being like, no, this is actually a good idea. And so that scene is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, why is that scene really there? Does that?
What happens after that is
the guy
who's like, who's interested in her and who Bruce Willis is jealous of. She like gives him a gift, but we didn't need the scene prior to that. I don't think
we didn't really need everything leading up to. I mean, I'm like, I didn't. I mean, all the scenes, you're like, I guess I could take or leave it. Like, but that was a weird one. And yeah, is he named? There's some guy who is interested in her, and then she's like, but I can't, you know, because she's not through her grief process, which is, I think, like a valid arc, but that's the most you get out of her, is like she is someone who has lost her spouse recently, mm-hmm. and is like not sure if she's ready to move on. That all makes sense, but that's like literally all we get.
Right. I mean, overall, the women who are in the story are really only there because of their relationships to the two main male characters.
Mothers and wives. Yeah. That's just mothers and wives.
And the Toni Collette character is slightly more important.
Yeah, I think she's the most important female character, yeah. which is like, not saying that much, but right. they cast Toni Collette, you know, so you're like, that's significant.
Right.
Right. Her character, I mean, I like her character. I think we are told that she's a single parent because divorce equals ghosts. Mm-hmm. And she's a single parent. She has two jobs, but we don't know what either of them are.
Right.
Which is like, all right, M. Night Shyamalan was, you know, we got, you know, but it's just supposed to be like she's working very hard. Mm-hmm. And then it's a Toni Collette role in the 90s or early 2000s. So she's like, what's going on with my son?
Right.
Yeah.
Although I would say, so what little we do know about her, right, is that she's divorced. She's working two jobs. Mm-hmm. She is really good, a really good mother. She's very caring and attentive. Yeah. I think she's like appropriately concerned for Cole's safety while also being like frustrated by his at times alarming behavior because he's being haunted by ghosts.
Right.
But then her also like she's frustrated by her own inability to help him. Like there's that scene where she's just like, they're kind of arguing about this like bumblebee pendant and she's like, I'm tired in my body and my mind and my heart. And like, mm-hmm. you can tell she's like trying very hard to be a good mother and she just has a son who sees dead people. So how do you parent that?
any mothers in the audience? No. I like her character, and I also think that we don't, in like pop culture in general, you don't get a ton of mother-son stories that mm-hmm. Play out eventually as positively as this one does. I feel like there's, and this movie has this as well, but there's a lot of father-son stories because men be making movies about their problems. Mm-hmm. But I think that like mother-son relationships are kind of underrepresented, and father-daughter as well. Mm-hmm. But I like that you understand why Toni Collette feels frustrated. It doesn't seem irrational at all. And you also understand why Cole is nervous to tell her, because he doesn't want to be labeled as, you know, an unstable child of divorce, which Bruce Willis is labeling him as.
Right.
So I like their relationship. And I also like, because I forgot about the scene where she's dressed as Velma at the end, which does make me cry because I'm easily manipulated. But where their relationship resolves is, and the way that sort of Haley Joel Osment proves to Toni Collette that she should believe Haley Joel Osment is he, you know, shares an anecdote about his grandmother, her mother who passed away, and they're crying and she believes him. And mm-hmm. you don't know. I'm like, what is she going to do now? Like, we don't really right. know. But you're like, okay, they're okay. She believes him and they're going to figure it out, which I think was like a lovely mother-son relationship arc.
Indeed, especially because in that moment, we realize that Haley Joel Osment's character is a feminist icon because he's trying to help women pass the Bechdel test. He's like, hey, mom, grandma says hi. She saw you at the dance recital and she wants you to know that you make her proud every day.
And Toni Collette's not catching on. She's like, uh-huh. I'm like, no, you have to talk to her. Come on. Haley Joel Osment's, okay, his entire character, like, his name is Cole, but it's like, it's Haley Joel Osment.
Right.
his whole character, I like his character. I think Cole is a little sweetie pie.
Yeah.
He's a troubled boy, but
he's being sweet. Haunted.
He's literally being haunted by every plot ghost. Every plot relevant ghost is haunting him. All the non-plot relevant ghosts, who knows where they are. Mm. But I like that the first ghost that he's able to break through with is Misha Barton. Mm-hmm. So he's helping women expose their mother's grimes, feminists.
He's an ally.
He's an ally. He just is. But what I really do like about the way, and it's like, I don't know how intentional this is, because I don't think that this is like a movie that's like meant to show like young people a role model through this haunted child. But maybe, we don't know. But in general, I mean, I think it would be kind of like an easy bad writing thing to have, you know, because like Haley Joel Osment's character is being bullied mm-hmm. by other boys who are very like, you know, emulating macho behavior.
Tommy Tamasimo or whatever. He's a cough syrup commercial, so he's the best actor in the world. He's like, that character, hilarious. Anyway,
an icon. Feminist icon, Tommy Tamasino? Yeah. Question mark. But, you know, we see other young boys, like, bullying Haley Joel Osment in these very, like, typically, like, macho ways. Mm-hmm. And Haley Joel Osment doesn't respond with, like, toxicity. He's just like, I've got bigger fish to fry. Like, Tommy Tamasino, we'll deal with him later. We've got ghosts that are screaming. Like,
so and, like, scratching him. And
they're scratching him. Oh. Why are they scratching him? He's so nice.
I know.
Also, on the rewatch, the special effects in this movie, I'm like, I looked up because I'm like, maybe this movie was made for $14. But it was not. It was, they had a $40 million budget yeah. in 1999. So like even more now. But if you look at, there's a scene where you see, I mean, you know, female ghost representations pretty good in this movie. Mm. So, but one of the first ones is a mother who has she slit her wrists. We don't find anything else out other than she wants to scream at, like, her unfinished business. Blah, we don't know.
I think it's implied that she has an abusive husband.
Right, but it's like, what's Haley Joel Osment going to do about that?
Right.
Anyway, but when she turns and we see the special effects, it's literally like eye party, like like it's like the effects are not there. It's not just like, great. Yeah, it's Halloween makeup yes. that they're wearing. And then Misha Barton has like a CVS brand like ghost makeup on her.
Going back to the mother-son relationship.
Sure.
Because I also quite like the way it plays out, especially because, so, you know, she's a single mother. We're not totally sure how recent the divorce was or how recently his dad left.
Or how long he's been seeing ghosts, but we have to assume
since
the
birth.
Day
after. Well, because there's all those photos on the wall where, like, Tony Collette's like, what's this little shimmer in this photograph? And there were some of
so
him
he's
when
just
he's
been
a
with
baby.
Well, then that challenges. I thought it was like, oh, your father and I got divorced. And that second it's like, boop, like ghosts have logged in. Oh, so it's just like you're born with it.
Maybe
I thought it was once your parents get divorced, you see ghosts.
Maybe it's that when you have a baby who sees ghosts, it's so much pressure on your marriage that you get divorced.
Oh, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
You're like, why is it? Why are there so many orbs in this picture of our son? And then they break up. So really, what you're saying is, the divorce is Haley Joel Osment's fault, and we love to hear that. The divorce was the child's fault.
I don't wish to imply that.
Interesting, you would say that.
But the relationship between mother and son, in a lot of movies you would see that dynamic play out where, like, the boy would be like, when's daddy coming home? Where's my dad? Like, either an implicit or an explicit idea that the mother isn't enough. He needs a male parental figure there.
I agree with that, but I would also push
like,
back
yeah,
a little bit.
Cole doesn't do that, but
yeah. Well, but because it's like, you know, it's Toni Collette, like, it's made very clear that she is a good mother. Mm-hmm. She's trying her best to understand.
But then you kind of, I feel like M. Night Shyamalan kind of has it both ways, because Bruce Willis comes in, he becomes this parental figure. He's showing up to plays. Mm. He's showing up to the hospital. He's doing these quote unquote fatherly duties. And it's, I feel like the plot would have you believe that Haley Joel Osment wouldn't have been able to resolve his issues without this ghost father figure appearing. And then, like, probably kind of traumatically disappearing.
Right.
But I don't know. I was sort of, because I was like, oh, that's cool that, like, I do, I love the mother-son relationship, but I feel like there's also the slight implication by the movie that Toni Collette couldn't have gotten the job done on her own. Like, the ghost daddy needed to come in for a few weeks.
Right, because Toni Collette isn't a ghost, so she can't help with the ghosts.
I know, which is just, like, rude. It's like, Toni Collette could be a ghost if she wanted. He didn't tell her. But I don't know. Yeah, it was like, it wasn't like, I, and again, I'm just like, I don't know who was thinking this hard about it. I think we have like thought a few laps around the first draft of the script, but I don't know. I feel like there is the implication that it's still like that nuclear family dynamic that is able to accomplish what the story wants to.
I see what you're saying, but I feel like Bruce Willis, who knows how long he's been stalking Cole before they actually start talking to each other.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's implied that he's only around for maybe a few weeks or a couple months or so before he then, like, disappears.
Because it's like he needs to help Cole. Cole needs to help Misha Barton for some reason. And then everyone's fine? Question? Like, we don't know.
Yeah. They need to help each other.
Like a father and son, maybe? But I don't know. Yeah, ultimately, the doomsday clock is at 100 seconds. That's what I'm going to start saying when I run out of ideas.
Okay. There's a few times when you learn that, like, Cole wears his dad's, like, glasses, or, like, the frames of his glasses, or, like, his watch. Maybe it's just, like, a small attempt to be like, I wish my daddy was still here. But it's not overwhelming. But then, because, you know, Bruce Willis does sort of step in to be his dad.
His father.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, most of the stuff, I mean, I feel like there is a version of this movie that would have, like, hit on that theme way harder in a more egregious way.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is, I mean, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies, so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We do see Toni Collette's character doing laundry in two different scenes.
Well, who else is going to do? Well, that's true, though. Two scenes is unnecessary.
Yeah, one scene max.
One scene we're like, well, this is, you know, like, she's, you know, obviously, who else would be doing it? In two scenes we're like, what are her jobs?
Right.
Like, she has two jobs.
And why does she let her son roam around at night with nobody? There's, with ghosts.
Where's the babysitter at? Where is she? Or he? We don't know. Sorry, I just wanted to be inclusive with my babysitting.
I'm trying to look through my notes to see if I have anything else. else?
I wrote down a lot of female ghosts.
A lot of female ghosts.
I don't even really know. Again, I'm just like, what really does this plot point serve? Like, he's able to help Misha Barton ghost, who's being killed by her mom. But we get no insight as to, like, what's going on there. And so that scene just to me mostly reads as very bizarre. Misha Barton gets him the VHS evidence tape.
Right.
That she's conveniently recorded. And then Haley Joel Osment goes to her father and is like, here's evidence. And he's like, let me watch it during the wake. He pops it in during the wake from a kid he's never met.
Who was there alone. Because Bruce Willis is dead. He's not there.
His wake alone.
Yeah.
And like in any other world, it would be like a SpongeBob cartoon. But like, but in this case, this 8-year-old's handing him important evidence about his daughter. And we see the mother doing the Munchausen's by proxy thing she's doing. And again, in a very over-the-top visual signifiers of like the thing that is clearly poison has like a little X symbol on it.
Yeah, what was that bottle?
What was in there?
What is it? I don't know.
She pours it. She's like bleaching soup. So we see her do the soup bleach, and then she goes to Misha Barton, like, stop saying the soup tastes like bleach.
Yeah.
And we have no insight. I mean, it's like, I didn't know about even the term Munchausen's by proxy until, like, the whole Gypsy Rose case, like, 5 years ago. And let's talk about it after the show. But I feel like Munchausen's by proxy and, like, the idea of keeping someone sick intentionally was not a, like, pop culture. Like, people didn't know about this then. So the fact that it pops up and then her husband, like, just confronts her and is like, why did you bleach the soup? And she just goes, oh. And that's the last we... Does she get arrested? Like, do we get any explanation? Like, we get nothing. And when I first saw this movie, I'm like, wow, she seems like a real bitch. Like, I'm like, but that's clear. There's so much going on there that it's such a complicated issue for M. Night Shyamalan to choose to be like, let me present this very complex mental illness in one scene with characters you don't know.
I think there's a lot that gets, like, seeds that get planted in the first movie that call for a sequel. I think there should be a sequel to The Sixth Sense. I think it should be called The Seventh Sense, even though that doesn't make sense. But, like, what happened? I want to know what happens with, like, now that, like, he has a friendly relationship with ghosts now, I guess, at the end, we're supposed to believe. So, like, what does that look like?
You have to be careful, though, because they will make that movie. Like, we don't actually want it. If anyone is listening that's like, maybe we should. No, we don't want it. You know, because what was that? They just did that with The Shining. They were like, what if the people are wondering? You're like, no one is wondering.
Oh, you mean with Dr.
What
Sleep?
Happened to Dan? Like, no one gives a fuck what happened to Danny. So... I just, sorry. Hey, let's talk about Haley Joel Osment for a second. He's had a lot of great roles, Caitlin.
Okay.
Maybe you've seen him most recently in that Zac Efron Ted Bundy movie. Anyone see that? He's fine in that. His whole role in that is he goes up to Ted Bundy's ex-girlfriend and is like, I wish you could get over Ted Bundy. That's his whole role.
Right.
He's crying. He's like, I just, Ted Bundy is cock blocking me at every turn. Like, so he's not given much, but he does a good job.
Yeah.
My favorite post Sixth Sense Haley Joel Osment role is the movie Sex Ed. Has anyone on the planet besides me seen Sex Ed? Okay. So... Sex Ed is a movie that is currently streaming for free on something called Tubi. Where am I? Tubi? I was like, what the fuck is Tubi? And then I downloaded it to watch Sex Ed. Sex Ed is a 2014 movie where Haley Joel Osment plays a sex ed teacher named Ed. That's really all you need to know to want to watch it. But he plays a sex ed teacher named Ed. He's trying to, he's having a bit of a dry spell, but he's talking about sex all day. So he's horny. Retta plays his best friend slash landlord. Uh-huh. She shows up every few scenes to give exposition, and then she disappears. Anyways, at the end, Haley Joel Osment has sex.
Wow. Spoiler.
Yeah, sorry. Well, and then
what if you're like, at the end, he was dead the whole time?
You gotta watch Sex Ed. It's on Tubi.
Here's something that's sort of relevant to what we normally discuss.
I know.
So there's a component in this movie, and it's recurring in a lot of like horror thriller movies, but something's happening to someone and no one believes them at first. Mm-hmm. And groups of people who are often not believed.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Mm-hmm. Children, like we see in The Sixth Sense. Women, ever heard of them? Seniors, you know, basically any marginalized group. And there's a line of dialogue where Cole says, like, please believe me. You believe me, right? How will you help me if you don't believe me? And that's just, you know, poignant.
I think that's good. Yeah. Yeah. Like it does like make it clear that like, and that's also like what is preventing Cole from having any sort of resolution with his mother, is that he's so afraid that she won't believe him. Mm-hmm. And that if he tells her the truth, that she will disown him or love him less or whatever the internal logic is, that M. Night Shyamalan accidentally made a point.
Right. Because there's even that scene where he says something like, no one knows my secret. I can't even tell my mom because I don't want my mom to look at me the way everyone else does. Like, I'm a freak. So, like,
right.
It's because they,
It's very sweet.
Sweet boy.
Let's talk about M. Night Shyamalan for a second.
Okay.
Because, he gets a lot of shit from people. He has made more good movies than you think, okay? But in all seriousness, M. Night Shyamalan, I think, when I was very young, he was one of the first non-white directors I was aware of that was wildly successful, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think like when I was a kid, I knew of Spike Lee, but I wasn't old enough to see his movies. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, and then I could watch M. Night Shyamalan movies. So he did this movie was wildly successful. He basically got a blank check for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
For better or worse. After making this movie. And so I think that like that is worth acknowledging, and that is like a very impactful thing, because you know, directors are still overwhelmingly male but also overwhelmingly white. Mm-hmm. of any gender. So the fact that, you know, this is a director who he grew up in Philly, but he's the son of immigrants, and like that is a really powerful, cool thing.
Yeah.
And so I just wish his movies were better. So you know, there's a lot, but I think he was truly one of the first non-white directors I knew of, and was very, you know, in the zeitgeist, if you will. But also he ruined Avatar, so I don't know.
Oh boy.
Some people disagree. Okay. But yeah, I also wanted to mention M. Night Shyamalan's 1999, which was a wild year. So this was like, The Sixth Sense was his big breakout movie. He wrote and directed it. But prior to that, he was like a Hollywood writer. He would do a lot of like third or fourth drafts of movies that were basically done. And then they're like, we got to give it the M. Night touch. So his film credits in 1999, in addition to The Sixth Sense, are he did Punch Up on She's All That. And he wrote and is credited as the sole writer of Stuart Little. What a wild year for him. Like, he hasn't had a year like that. I mean, he doesn't have to punch up Stuart Little anymore, but that was a fun movie.
I never saw it.
But yeah, like that was the year where he was like crossing over between being like a punch up writer and then like this twisty auteur.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But you know, like Stuart Little, it slaps. It's good. It's nice. Gina Davis is in it.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
She plays his mother.
I do like that M. Night Shyamalan's basically his whole ethos is summarized in one line of dialogue in this movie, where Bruce Willis is like telling Cole a bedtime story about a prince who was driving a lot. And then Haley Joel Osment is like, you've never told a story before, have you? You have to add some twists.
And also, M. Night Shyamalan does sometimes, like, M. Night Shyamalan, I love him. And then sometimes you're like, your confidence is really for, like, it's difficult. Because what he does, and a lot of directors do this, but he specifically has said, like, I'm basically this generation's Alfred Hitchcock. And Alfred Hitchcock would play a small role in all of his movies. Mm. So movie one, M. Night Shyamalan's like, I gotta be in this, yeah, because otherwise how will people know I'm Alfred Hitchcock now? So he plays a small role in this movie.
Gives himself a cameo. I love a lot of his movies, right?
All of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just, I think that's what Alfred Hitchcock did. He would be in a few seconds of every movie. And mm-hmm. I particularly love, like, even in some of his worst movies, the M. Night Shyamalan cameos are always so fun. He's always like a park ranger being like, no, go into those woods, see what happens. Like, he's always like introducing them into danger. It's fun. He should act more.
He doesn't seem like a bad actor. There is a Chuck E. Cheese reference in this movie.
Thank you. Visibility is important. But it's also Toni Collette needs to explain. Was that supposed to be some sort of class thing? Like, they're like, Toni Collette and Haley Joel Osment are at this like fancy, nice birthday party, and the mother at the fancy birthday party doesn't know what Chuck E. Cheese is, and Toni Collette gets all embarrassed, and she's like, "Well, it's the greatest place on earth."
All right, because she goes, "Chuck E. Who?" And she's like, "Chuck E. Cheese,"
which is what I say every time. Oh man, it is the best place on earth.
Okay.
You know?
I've been many times with you.
I know, for my birthdays, of course.
Yes. It's a true story.
Yeah, so they've mentioned Chuck E. Cheese and cats, and they can't take that away from us. So do you have anything else?
I think that's about it. We're running a bit out of time. Do we have any time for questions or comments?
I think we have time for a few questions
or
comments.
Does anyone have any questions, comments? Come up to the mic if you can, so that we can...
Up to the mic. There's one person. One brave soul. Oh, come on up. Oh, I love your sweater.
Okay, it's so nice. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Ed.
Hi.
What's your question?
Sex Ed.
That's me. That's what they call me.
Your reputation precedes you.
My question is, who do you think Alfred Molina would play in this
movie? Thank you for asking.
I had to ask.
Who would Alfred Molina... I think he could be Misha Barton Ghost easily. In all my fantasies, unfortunately, Alfred Molina takes a role from a woman. He could be Misha Barton Ghost. I think he would have genuinely been a good Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a chameleon. Speaking of chameleon, he could have been the killer at the beginning. Because then you would get to see him without his shirt on.
Yeah.
That's the answer I'll do. He's the killer at the beginning, and then we get to see him in his little underwear. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Oh my God, what if that was the only question?
My name's Ivan, and I believe that in Tommy's, whatever his last name, yes, and I think in his first scene, he explains to queer icon Haley Joel Osment what improv is.
Like, yes!
He's explaining.
Oh, yes! I had that written down!
Improv.
You're so right.
My question is, as a non-binary comedy fan,
yes,
how do you feel about The Sixth Sense actually being about Haley Joel Osment, non-binary icon, mm-hmm. trying to make it in comedy, but having to deal with Tommy, this annoying, know-it-all, improv, cishet white man.
Oh my God!
I was just wondering your take on that. Thank you!
Oh my God! Wait a second, I need to process for
a second.
Okay.
It's a problem
all,
that we can relate to.
It's the prequel to Joker. It's the prequel to Joker. It's literally, you fast forward, Toni Collette is Joker's mom.
Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding. Wow. What if this is all about Haley Joel Osment's journey to the Upright Citizens Brigade? He's like, I saw a ghost and then I learned the power of yes and now my life is... No, he really does. I mean, all he does is yes and the ghost.
And he listens. That's such a big part of improv.
Listens.
He listens to the ghosts.
Yeah.
You know.
And he doesn't respond irrationally because that would be a bad scene. Like, he's just, wow. Wow. Everyone should take classes at Good, I guess is what we're saying. They're... That's why I had that written down of like the worst character in the story happens to mention improv. Can't be a mistake. Can't be a mistake. Something to consider.
Any other? I think we have time for one more question or comment, if such a thing exists. Yes.
I have a bit of a two-parter. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm afraid this is contrary to the spirit of the show, but I wanted to comment on your outfit for a moment.
What if I was like stormed out?
So we have like 70s themed children's bedsheet, homemade miniskirt,
yes.
Cowboy themed.
Yes.
One of them is topless.
Oh, I mean, you'll find that all of them are topless.
Oh, okay. I don't have the best view over here. It's incredible.
That's
and
okay.
then
Thank
you have a single pocket in the middle of your chest, like
I found
Superman?
A piece of popcorn in it earlier.
It's like pocket
Caitlin
Superman.
Caitlin saw it, yeah.
It's amazing. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Related to movies.
Yes.
For a long time, there was a great controversy on one of the popular Bechdel websites. And I'm sorry if you've already covered this, but the Lego movie, whether or not it passed the Bechdel test hinged on whether or not you considered Princess Unikitty a woman. And I was hoping that you could weigh in on that.
Caitlin?
I, of course, have seen both Lego movies. I do consider Princess Unikitty a woman.
Do they refer to her in the movies with she, her pronouns?
I think so.
I think that they do, right? I've seen the movies, but I think so. I don't know. When I watch the Lego movie, I'm just like, I have a crush on Phil Lord.
Yes.
That's
the
what
best
I
takeaway
think.
From that.
Yeah.
I think we just have to cover the Lego movie now.
Yeah,
really,
that's a good
to
question,
really
though.
Adequately answer your question.
We should. We should. I think like a soft yes.
Sure.
A soft yes.
And speaking of the Bechdel test,
yes.
Does this movie, The Sixth Sense, pass?
It does.
I think it's kind of okay.
So I say when a mother kills her child that is also a female child, it passes.
But we
don't know her first name.
We don't know her last name. Such an insignificant character, I feel like.
I feel like Emily Shyamalan feels like she's really important for some reason.
There's an argument to be made for it passing because we do know Misha Barton's character's name, which
Kira.
Is Kira. Right.
And then we know her last name, and then there's the Mr. and Mrs. character.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think it's really funny if that scene passes the Bechdel test. Second of all, I feel like if it would be a little different for me if the father was given a first name and the mother wasn't.
Right.
But neither of them are given a first name. They are Mr. and Mrs. We do find it out.
Mm-hmm. I forget as well.
So I say bleaching your daughter's soup, canon.
This is the Bechdel test.
Canon.
Okay, then I'll say yes as well.
Yes.
So give it up for The Sixth Sense for murdering several women. Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale. I truly have no idea.
So
0 to 5 nipples based on its representation of women. I mean, it's quite neutral. It's not, this movie doesn't hate women. It's not brutal and cruel to women the way that a lot of movies, especially from that year, were. I mean, between like Fight Club.
Movies that like M. Night Shyamalan worked on. Like
She's All That. Cruel Intentions comes out this year. The Mummy. Never Been Kissed. A lot of like really regressive movies that treat women horribly. This movie doesn't do that.
No.
So feminist text? No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I think it just sort of makes the choice was made at some point of like, I don't know how to write female characters, so I won't. Which is not the solution to that problem.
Right.
But it is better than saying I'm going to write
female characters to complete stereotypes and to like only service the male characters I want to write.
And there's no narrative reason whatsoever why the child who sees dead people couldn't be a little girl. There's no reason why the child psychologist couldn't have been a woman. Like, it's just, yeah, the movies were like, well, these better be male characters or else no one will see it.
Right. And there is, I mean, there's like some, I think it is nice that, I don't know who, like, busting this trope benefits, but the idea of like the quote unquote evil child who is like communicated with by the other world is usually made out to be fully the villain of the movie, where you've got like the bad seed, you've got Damien from The Omen, and usually if like a kid can communicate with the other side, they are the devil. But in this case, they're the sweetest baby angel who ever lived.
Right. It's so progressive.
It's progressive in that terms of children who can speak to ghosts. So, you know.
And again, because he's helping women talk to other women, he's advocating for Misha Barton ghost. I don't, it's like a 1.5.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, because you're just like, women are there. And
they're there. They're not that important to the story, but they're, you know, the male characters aren't cruel to them.
They're there. They're cosplaying. Sure. Sure,
oh,
Scooby-Doo cosplay. they're only like wives, mothers, daughters, very stereotypical female roles. Yes, but 1.5.
Yeah,
1.5. And I'm gonna give 1 to Toni Collette, and then I'm gonna give the last 2. It doesn't feel right to get Haley Joel Osment's too young to give him a nipple in this movie, so I'll give it to Mommy Murderer.
Oh, sure.
Mrs. Bleach Soup. I believe her character's name was.
I'll give my 1.5 nipples to his wife, because she deserved better. We should have learned more about her. The only thing we know is that she is sad and on Zoloft, I guess, which is horrifying
and to
everyone a psychologist.
Remember to talk to your loved ones while they sleep. That will solve all your problems. Horrifying. Thank you so much for coming. Give it up for yourselves.
All right, folks, that was our episode on The Sixth Sense.
We did want to add in really quickly that the evening after this, we did watch Sex Ed on Tubi.
Yes.
And that's not an endorsement of Tubi, because the movie is wildly offensive and also just boring and hard to watch.
Yeah, it is. So when we recommended you watch it during the live show,
we were joking.
We were, yes.
But we didn't even realize we shouldn't have even recommended it as a joke.
It's wildly problematic, and we are withdrawing.
We take back the recommendation, but, you know, as you heard, it killed in the room. So
True.
So Tubi is canceled. Moving on. Thank you to everyone who came to the show. That was such a blast. And to people who came to the stand-up show afterwards.
Yes.
We love our Philadelphia fans.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to anyone who asked a question, made a comment, who bought merch at the show. That helps us all a great deal. So thanks to everyone who participated.
And as usual, you can find us in all the same social media places, on Twitter and Instagram at Bechdelcast. We have a Facebook. We don't really use it. Twitter and Instagram and our email is the best way to go. Mm-hmm. We had live shows coming up, as you heard at the beginning of the episode, in Austin, Boston, and Los Angeles coming up in the spring.
What a mouthful.
Austin, Boston, and Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
pending Corona, etc. And
one last thing.
Patreon.
The Matreon, yes. So subscribe to our Matreon, where you can hear those other Titanic episodes that you might not be privy to.
Very true. And it's Cher March.
It's Cher March on the Matreon.
On the Matreon. So this month we're doing The Witches of Eastwick and Moonstruck, of course. We did not know before we chose that topic that Cher is voting for Biden. So we just to cover our own asses, it was too late.
But so my one last thing is that during the live show, toward the end, when people were making, audience were like, you know, asking questions and making comments and stuff. Mm-hmm. Someone asked a question about whether or not the Lego movie passes the Bechdel test. And there was this whole discussion on, well, does Unikitty, does she count as a woman? And I totally forgot to mention that Unikitty, whether or not she identifies as a human woman, mm-hmm. she definitely does have 8 nipples. And that's Cat Facts with Caitlin.
Thank you. And we're recording this 1.5 months later.
I was like editing the episode and
this
everyone,
has been haunting you.
The whole thing is like,
it sounds like I'm gearing up to be like, well, I have the answer to this. And it's that Unikitty has 8 nipples. And then I just like didn't remember my own bit.
You so, love to see
so it. So I'm doing it now.
I like it. You make good
you.
On it.
Thank you so much.
And with that, have a great week.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you soon.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.